This is My Travel Reviews with Gary Bembridge, the podcast of first-hand travel experience by and for people with a passion for travel. And on this week's podcast, podcast number 4 in the series, we're going to be looking at Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. Hello and welcome to podcast number 4 in the series of My Travel Reviews with Gary Bembridge. I am Gary Bembridge, and just to remind you that if you're looking for more details about the podcast, the script notes and all the links, photographs, video clips, etc., etc., you can actually find those on the blog that goes with the podcast, and that is at mytravelreviews.blogspot.com. And today I'm actually recording this in London on the 30th of September, but I'm going to be talking about Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, where I was for about 10 days in August of this year. I was there both for pleasure and for business. So I'm going to talk about the two sides of it. And we're going to look at a couple of things in the podcast. We're going to look at a very brief history of Dubai and the United Arab Emirates, because for a lot of people, they are not that familiar with Dubai. I want to talk about two different places to stay. One, very much if you're there for vacation, and the other, if you're there on business. Very different places and very different degrees of suitability, etc. I'm going to talk about what to do in Dubai, which up front I'll tell you is mostly about relaxing, swimming, shopping and eating. When to go in Dubai, because in summer it gets to be over 40 degrees Celsius by day and about 30 degrees Celsius by night. I'll talk about that in Fahrenheit for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm going to give you some observations about Dubai. It is in some ways a kind of a strange sort of place. And as a complete aside at the end, we're going to end with a book review about a book I've just finished reading about the development of the cruise industry. It's got nothing to do with Dubai, other than Dubai is trying to track lots of cruise ships at the moment. But it's just a way that we're going to end the podcast. So that's the podcast we're talking about, and that's all about Dubai. So let's talk a little bit about Dubai, history of the Dubai. In terms of where about it is, if it gives you some sense of that, I flew to Dubai from London, out of London Heathrow, on British Airways. And you fly over Europe, heading over towards Greece, you go over Turkey. Then you get a little bit scary, because if you watch the map that they have on the plane, you go over places that you often read about in the news, like Syria, Iraq, Saudi Arabia. You end up in Dubai, and Dubai, in the south, you have Oman. In the west, you have Saudi Arabia. In the north, you have Qatar, I guess it's pronounced. You have the Gulf, and if you go across the Gulf, you're in Iran and Pakistan. All the kind of places you read about in the news and hear about in the news. So you're kind of in the place already where you're feeling maybe this is a little bit unusual. But anyway, just that gives you a sense of where it is. Now, it's quite complicated, because actually Dubai is one of 7 emirates that make up this place called the United Arab Emirates. And the main city is sometimes called Dubai City to distinguish it from the Emirates. So it's almost like lots of little provinces, but they're all individually run. And Dubai is run by, and I'm going to get the pronunciation wrong, but by Sheikh Maktoum bin Rashid Al Maktoum. Now, this man has been ruling Dubai for a very long time, about 30 years, and actually he's getting on a bit, and actually it's some of the crown prince who probably really drive it forward. But he's a true visionary, Sheikh Maktoum bin Rashid Al Maktoum, and I'll talk a little bit about that. Dubai is actually the second largest emirate in this place. Abu Dhabi is the bigger place, and it is very different from the other members of the United Arab Emirates, because oil is much less important to it. It's only about 10% of its gross domestic product. And actually, most of its income now comes from a trading zone, which is really about the history of Dubai itself. It's a lot about trading. And for many, many years, it's been a center of trading. It's also been at odds with many of the people around it. So it's traced back to about 1799. And there's lots of tribes leaving in the 1800s. And then eventually they have truces, and all gets become a bit complicated. But anyway, in 1892, Dubai actually came under the protection of the United Kingdom. And they had this arrangement for quite a while. And the rulers of Dubai, they spent a lot of time on trade and commerce, unlike the other neighbours. And it became a quite important port already, and in the 1930s, it was known for its pearl exports. Then in 1966, it actually, or around about the mid-1960s, it discovered oil about 120 kilometers off the coast. And that kind of fueled a huge boom, as you can imagine. And it was about this time that the United Arab Emirates were formed, because Britain pulled out of the area in 1971, and so they kind of formed the United Arab Emirates. But it really fostered during the 70s, 80s, very much as trade, and it has things like, for example, it has free trade in gold, and many people accuse it of being a hub for gold smuggling into India and places like that. So gold and gold souks are very, very popular. It's now becoming more and more of a tourist destination. That's really kind of fueled by the government. And the government is also trying to bring in lots of industry. So they have free zones through the city. So you'll find in an internet city, and you'll find media city, and all these kind of little pockets of business, because they're given special concessions. The thing that's also very unusual about Dubai is its population is mostly expatriates. The actual nationals are by a long way a minority. Now, a lot of these expats are from South Asia and the Philippines, but increasingly from Europe. None of these people get naturalization, and none of these people get permanent residence. And only relatively recently have you actually been allowed to buy villas and flats, etc. And a lot of these are in new created areas. Official language is Arabic, but English and Hindu is very widely spoken. And you know, speaking English is no issue at all. Islam is the official religion, and there is some tolerance of other religions, and they're allowed to practice it. But there are some restrictions in the way that they can go around distributing literature and promoting it, all that kind of stuff. Schools apparently are mostly in English. And it's really there, you know, this whole shopping and trade is a big engine. And they have these big things called the Dubai Shopping Festival, Dubai Summer Surprises, and these kind of things, which are held at various points of the year to attract more and more tourism in. They also have some things like the Dubai World Cup, which is supposed to be the world's richest horse race with over $15 million worth of prize money. So it's a really big thing. And they're currently working on this huge, big development for tourism called Dubai Land, which is going to have all sorts of things like ski slopes, which you won't believe because it's in the middle of the desert, water parks. It's kind of like a Disneyland without Disney, if you like. Dubai is also very well known for these big land projects. So you've probably heard about the Palm and the World, where they're building these things out at sea, which are so vast you can see them from space, if you're ever in space and happen to look down on Dubai. But they're actually really being on them, they're building all these villas and property, really largely targeted at expats who are not allowed to work. If you own property there and you buy it as a property, it doesn't give you any right to work. They also have some huge skyscrapers, and the most famous ones are known as the Emirate Towers, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later because I stayed in them. And they apparently are amongst the top sort of 25 tallest buildings in the world. And actually, Dubai is building all these huge 40, 50-story blocks everywhere you look. It's also incredibly well-known for the Burj Al Arab five-star hotel, although they actually claim it's a six-star hotel. And they're also creating this huge big waterfront thing, which is going to be about 2.5 times the size of Washington. Because the one thing Dubai has is humongous amounts of land. It's all desert. Everywhere you look is just desert. So that's a history of Dubai and United Arab Emirates, which I thought was probably important to get up front. It's very efficient to get in. They have a great airport, Dubai International Airport. It's a massive place, getting bigger all the time. They're building a second airport called Jebel Ali, which at the moment is going to be a cargo place, but they reckon eventually, with the volume of tourists they hope to attract, is also going to have passengers. So that's the history of Dubai. I know it's longer than I've spent on the podcast before, but I thought it would be interesting to understand a little bit about Dubai, and we'll come back at the end and talk about some observations. But in the meantime, I'm going to move on and talk about two different places to stay in Dubai. So the first place I'm going to talk about in terms of staying in Dubai is if you're going there on vacation. I've stayed at this place twice, and I love it. It's part of the Le Méridien group, and as usual, I put links, etc., on the site. Now, the Le Méridien, which I guess is a French-owned chain, have a lot of hotels in Dubai and in Abu Dhabi. I can never say that word properly. Abu Dhabi. But in Dubai, they have various suites. They have various kind of condo apartment places. They have the Grosvenor House. They have what they call Le Méridien Dubai. They have Le Méridien Fairway. They have Meridian Sinai Beach Resort and Marina. They have the Le Meridien residence Diera. They have some residence Banya Square. And they actually also have a beach resort a little bit further out of Dubai. But the one place they do have is La Royal Meridian Beach Resort and Spa. So that's the Royal Meridian Beach Resort and Spa is that I'm going to talk about. And again, I'll put a link for that on the site. As I said, I've stayed there twice. It's on the Jeremiah Strip, and there's lots of building going around. It has very nice gardens, huge big swimming pool. And what's interesting about this hotel is it has three blocks. And it's almost a bit like on an airplane where they have kind of the economy, the club, and kind of the first class block. And although some of the apartments and hotel rooms and stuff, it's not strictly class segmented. That's kind of the concept. So you can get a very reasonably priced room in the kind of main block. They have the other block, which is called the club, which is a circular thing. You get kind of, they have a separate check-in and they have a club lounge and all that kind of stuff. And then in the more premium one, they have bigger suites and that kind of stuff. We actually stayed the first time in the club block, which was very nice, and the lounge was very nice. This time we actually stayed in the middle block, although we actually had a suite. We went a little bit over the top and got a bit carried away and probably spent more money than we should have. But we had this great suite, and the reason we went in the middle of summer, and we thought we might want to be spending a lot of time indoors. And they have this great package. So if you go to the Royal Meridian Beach Resort and Spa, book it on the website is what I'd suggest, and go into their offers and you'll find things called the celebration package, for example. Now watch those and look out for those, because what they do is they include pick up and transfers to and from the airport, and they pick you up in this beautiful white BMW, which is very nice. And they build in that you can eat at any of the restaurants at any time. And they have something like about 8 or 9 restaurants and bars, and I'll talk about those in a bit. But you can eat in any of them. You can have a starter, a main course, and a pudding at any of the restaurants, whether it's the most expensive restaurant in the hotel or the cheapest buffet in the hotel, and that's all included. And sometimes they have canapes and wine, all that sort of stuff. So look for the celebration package is what I would strongly, strongly suggest. Now, in terms of restaurants and bars, they have some really, really good restaurants in this place. And what's interesting in Dubai, because of the restrictions on drinking alcohol, most people go when they go out to eat seem to go to hotels. There are obviously independent standalone restaurants, but a lot of people go to the hotels. And they actually have 12 restaurants in this place. They have Prime Rib, which is like an American place, which we went to, which is very, very nice. They have a beautiful Italian restaurant called Ossigeno, or Ossigeno, and they have this very nice Italian food. They have a place, Fusion Restaurant, which is probably my favorite, which has Thai, Malay, Indonesian cuisine. Then they have a fish restaurant called Mavida, a sea breeze like a Mediterranean place, a pizzeria called La Fornes, a brasserie, which I guess is another name for a buffet. They have a tea lounge where they have a harpist playing in the afternoon, and a couple of bars, piano bars, and a place called Sachmo's, which is supposed to be like a dance place, but you never saw anyone in it, and the pool bar. So lots of restaurants. And the great thing about staying there is you're kind of on this place, and you kind of don't need to really leave. They have water sports, which are included partly in the price. We went on banana boats, which I think you paid for. You know, they drag you around and you get bouncing around. They have a nice big pool, nice clean beaches, and very, very nice. So that's the Royal Meridian, which I'd strongly recommend if you're going to go there on vacation. If you're going there on business, I wouldn't stay there because it's very, very touristy. And what's also strange is you almost feel like you're not in Dubai, and you feel like you're almost in a Mediterranean resort. It's a little bit artificial in a way. If you're going there on business, I would recommend the Emirates Towers Hotel, which is part of the same group, Jeremiah International, who own the Jumeirah Beach, and they own the Big Burj Al Arab and lots of other places. And this is a beautiful hotel. As I mentioned earlier, it's one of those two very tall blocks. And it's just stunning. You walk into this building and it's absolutely stunning. They have this massive atrium which soars up 50 floors with glass lifts zooming up and down it. This big central area with beautiful couches where they do teas and alcohol drinks if it's not kind of a dry period because of a religious festival or whatever. But it's just stunning. And it's a much more local place. You see much more local people, local businessmen or regional businessmen dressed in traditional clothing, you know, the white robes with the white turbans. And you see a lot more women dressed in the traditional clothing, you know, the black, etc. And it's much more local. If you stay at the Emirates Tower Hotel, you have very funky, very modern rooms. And for both this hotel and for the Royal Meridian, on the blog there'll be links to short video clips of the rooms that I've stayed in, and also there'll be links to photographs. You'll be able to go and look at the rooms. Also, what I've done for the Royal Meridian is I've taken a film in the glass lift, which gives you a great view of the pool and the lawn and the sea and everything. And in Emirates Towers, you'll see from the video, it's a very, very modern, very trendy room, and it's probably not the sort of place you want to relax in for if you're on vacation. But and the views are amazing because you're really high up, but there's not a lot to look at. It's in probably the main commercial district, and they would argue in the little booklet that I'm actually just looking at the moment, the pocket dictionary that they give you, it's in the main kind of business area. It's won loads and loads of awards. I mean, they list about 20, 25 awards that it's won: best business hotel in the Middle East, favorite overseas business hotel, best Mediterranean restaurant, best top 10 restaurants, best hotel in the Middle East, etc., etc., etc. Won a lot of awards. It has, again, a huge range of places to eat with all different types of culture or foods. And some of these are spread between a very nice mall that they have with Gucci and Armani and all that kind of stuff in there, because there's obviously lots of money in Dubai and people who stay there. But they have a wide range of restaurants. I ate in the sushi restaurant called Iti Sushi, which was great. But other people I know had eaten in places like the Rib Room, which is obviously a steakhouse, Scarlett's, which is kind of like Southern American food. Then they have kind of French food, kind of whatever kind of stuff you want, really, they have in it. Now, I mentioned that the rooms were very nice and very trendy. You can look at those. In terms of facilities, they have a very large health club, which is also open to outside members. Very large, very friendly people. They give you water and they give you towels, and it was really good. You can do personal training, all that kind of stuff there. They have quite a big swimming pool. However, the swimming pool is not great if you're there as a tourist. It's fine if you're there as a business, on a business trip, because in the afternoon it gets shade, which is not a big issue because it's very, very warm. Now, in terms of what to do in Dubai, let's talk very briefly about that. In Dubai, you go shopping. There are lots and lots of malls with lots of anything you want to buy in there, pretty good prices. But I'm not even going to recommend malls because there's so many of them. The new ones keep opening. You just ask the concierge which is the best one to go to. Go to that. The other thing which is great fun, and I really like it a lot, is Wild Wadi. I went there about two, three times on this trip, even the space of about 5 days. And Wild Wadi, it's very targeted towards kids. It's a water park, and it has a sort of a theme around kind of Arabian Nights theme. But what's interesting about it is most of the rides are connected. So you kind of get on a ride, and you'll go on a ride, which many of the time takes you uphill, which is also kind of unusual at a water park. You spend a lot of time going uphill in tubes. So you kind of almost go all the way around the park, up and down on rides. So it's quite good. You have to queue. You queue once or twice at places. But once you're on a ride, you kind of just go from ride to ride to ride. It's pretty kid-friendly. There's only one kind of scary ride, if you like, which is the Jumeirah Sinar, which goes you down a 27-meter plunge. They claim you go up to 80 kilometers an hour. I didn't do it. A lot of people do. A lot of people look a bit shaken when they get to the bottom of it. But most of it is relatively kid-friendly. They have like a wave pool, and it's really good. There's some bigger ones coming, bigger water parks coming in the new territory, sorry, the new complexes that they're building, Dubai Land, which is coming. So if you go in there in 2006, 2007, beyond that, there'll be that to do. And so there's really shopping and swimming. Now, because there's not a lot to do, you need to be very careful about the time of the year you go. And I put up a very good link from the BBC weather site. But pretty much in summer, once you go from, May, it gets up to 43 degrees, minimums of 34 degrees, that's all in Celsius. That's well over 100. In June, it goes up to 44. In July and August, it can get as high as 48 degrees, with a minimum down in the early 20s or so. It never rains in Dubai. I mean, pretty much never rains. They get like 2 millimeters is the most they ever get rain. So it just doesn't rain at all. Quite long hours, up to 10, 11 hours of sunlight. And even in their winter, inverted commas, where it's 29 degrees Celsius, you have like 8 hours of sun. So it's pretty good all year round. So that's when to go. Last thing to do, let's talk about some general observations of Dubai. Dubai is interesting. There's humongous development going on. Everywhere you look, they're just building, building, building. I mean, we just can't work out where all these people coming from. They're going to fill up all these blocks, and it gets us lots of expats. But in spite of the pace they're building, it's growing so fast. Rents have increased by 25 to 30% in the last year. So people I know who work there and colleagues who work for the company I work for, they have seen rent increases of 30% in spite of all this huge big property boom. But you just can't believe what you're seeing. Everywhere you turn, there's block after block after block being built. But there's a sense of surrealism because it's all being created. There's probably not a lot of soul to it. And as you heard earlier in the podcast, you know, it's all expats. So you don't have a real rich sense of culture and a rich sense of history because it's all, everything's new everywhere. And at the same time, you get this sense of disquiet, in my view. I love it there and have a great time. And I was thinking, should I buy here? Should I buy an apartment? Other than they're expensive, despite they're all build, build, build. There's something does just kind of feels wrong. And as I mentioned to you, kind of where it is, you know, you've got Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Iran, Turkey, you know, and you just think that this place is a fairly emotive place. And you just wonder, with Dubai being as liberal as it is, if that's going to be a comfortable situation in what is obviously a conservative part of the world. And so, although a lot of people are going there, I would recommend going there on vacation. I think it's a great place to go. It's very clean. It's very efficient. There's great facilities there. It's pretty reasonably priced. There's just something that worries me a little bit about it, and I can't really put my finger on it. So if you've been to Dubai, you live in Dubai, you have any thoughts on Dubai, I'd love to hear from you, because it's quite hard to put your finger on, and people who've gone there as expats just love it, and people who go on holiday love it. And as I said, we went back twice. So that's everything about Dubai, and that's pretty much everything on the podcast today, other than I said I was going to do a book review. The book I've read is Devils on the Deep Blue Sea, The Dream Schemes and Showdowns that Built America's Cruise Ship Empires. It's by a guy called Christopher A. Garin. It's a great read. I really enjoyed it. And I'm going to put it as a read this one. It's really interesting. And I'll put a more detailed review and links and recommendations on the blog, so you can go and if you want to find out a little bit more. But that's Devils on the Deep Blue Sea, Christopher Garin. Very interesting. Good read and well worth looking at. So that's all I've got for you today. Next week on the podcast, we're going to be looking at the QE2. I had an email from someone asking a couple of things about the QE2. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the QE2, a little bit of the history, and about crossing the QE2 in the middle of winter with 30, 40 foot waves and my observations on that and more. So that's next week. Until then, happy travels. And remember that you can find all details of this and much, much more on the blog at mytravelreviews.blogspot.com. That was My Travel Reviews with Gary Bembridge, the podcast of first-hand travel experience by and for people with a passion for travel. Join us next week for the podcast. Until then, happy travels.